awesome. You know, it's a charity fundraiser for your synagogue. Okay.
Yeah, he said he's going to sponsor.
All right. Seal the deal, man. Okay. Good morning, everyone. We are now learning Parshas Pinchas. Oh, and I forgot to get a chumash. 1 second.
You don't need a chumash, but I need a chumash.
Okay. Parshas Pinchas, which follows up from last week's discussion of the Jewish people sinning by the Baal Peor.
Still don't know what happened to Moshe.
Well, we'll help you out today a little. So, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe l'mor. Hashem said to Moshe, speaking, and you have the English in the first two sources. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, Pinchas the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron the priest, Heishiv eschamosi. Literally that means, turned back my wrath, my anger, may al b'nei Israel from the Jewish people. Bekano eskinosi. I will translate it now literally. Kino means jealousy. So literal translation is, when he was jealous for my jealousy. That's a literal meaning. B'tocham amongst them. And therefore I did not destroy the Jewish people in my anger. L'chein emor, therefore speak. I will give him a covenant of peace. And by Salol Zarachov Bris Kunasom, that he and his descendants after us will have the covenant of being eternal priests. Okay? Which we will just talk in a minute. Why? Tachas Asher Kine Lo'akov, because he was jealous for his God, V'yachabar L'Yisrael, and brought atonement for the Jewish people. That's what Rashi says. Now, that's what Chumash says. Says Rashi in the second source. You're all looking at that pasuk. It's a little bit difficult. So Rashi says, you have in the second source, Bekano es kinosi, benikmo es nikmasi. He took revenge for my vengeance. Bekatspo es haketzev shali liksof. He showed an anger to the anger that I would have shown. Now Rashi gives us a rule. Koloshon kino. Whenever you have an expression, the Hebrew word kino, which we translate as jealousy, really, hu hamischara linkom ninkastavar. It really is the activity of taking revenge for something. Okay? In other words, jealousy is a person's reaction when he finds that another is taking something that is rightly his. That's what jealousy is. Jealousy, revenge. Well, jealousy is defined as revenge. In other words, even though the Torah uses the word kane literally means jealousy, it's to be understood as nikkama. That's how Rashi is giving us a dictionary definition. Every expression of kina is contending with someone to take revenge. Okay, we still need explanation. But obviously, what the Torah is telling us here, that Pinchas took revenge for God against the Jewish people and against Cosby and Zimri, the prince of the tribe of Shimon and the Midianite woman, by killing them. And this was what he did. We will see next week's Parsha. Next week's Parsha, Parsha's Matos. In Perek, Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Beis and Gimel, which is your third source, Hashem says to Moshe, Nekom nikmas b'nei Yisrael me'is amidyonim. Take revenge again for the people of Israel from the Midianim. So again, we see the act of revenge. Now it specifically said revenge. Rashi over here said jealousy was revenge. Now, Torah specifically says revenge. Okay. Now, continuing. Psalm 94 is a psalm where we say, Kael Nekamas Hashem, Kael Nekamas Ophia. Hashem, O the God of vengeance, O God of vengeance, appear. Okay? Kael Nekamas Hashem, Kael is God's name, Nekamas of vengeance is Hashem, Kael Nekamas Ophia. To which the Gemara in the fifth source says that vengeance is a very great thing. It's a very great thing. Why? Because it appears between the two names of God, where we say Kael, that's one of God's name, Nekamos of vengeance, Hashem, Hashem's name, Kael Nekamos Ophia. So if we look at all these sources so far, what image do you get of God? God is a vengeful God that is something to be considered a very good thing. I'm just reading you what the sources say right now. Right? God is a God of vengeance. And Christianity has taken that concept to a very extreme nature. God is a very vengeful God. Now, is this what Judaism believes in? You think so? The Pasuk, I've quoted you five sources that said that God takes revenge. That's what it says. And certainly, you know, non-Jews who look at the Torah and look at its translation have very well picked up on what they felt the meanings and nuances were. However, if I would ask you, should you ever take revenge on somebody, you will quickly go to Sefer Vayikra in the sixth source, Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yutches. It says, Lo sikom velo sitor. You may not take revenge and you may not bear a grudge against somebody else. Love your neighbor like yourself. I am your Lord. So God says it's not a good thing to take vengeance. It would seem that God is being, what do they say? Do as I say and don't do as I do. You know, he's saying, no, it's a very bad thing to take revenge. I can take revenge. You can't take revenge. Right? That's what it seems to be saying. And why is revenge such a bad thing? So we'll look at the Sefer HaChinuch in source number 8. Why should a Jew not take revenge? Besides the fact it's just downright nasty. But why should a Jew not take revenge? So the Sefer HaChinuch writes, at the root of the precept lies the purpose that a man should know and reflect that whatever happens to him, good or bad, is caused by Hashem to occur to him. Anything that happens to you in this world, it is attributed 100% to Hashem. Meaning to say, Hashem wanted this to happen to you in the world. On Shabbos, we talked about Rav Kook's definition of the cosmic evil and the moral evil. Any evil in this world ultimately is attributed to Hashem. And even though it appears to be from a human hand, from a man's brother's hands, but nothing can be without the will of Hashem. Even though it's a person who hurt you, God forbid. Right? Or it looks like somebody else did this to me. Nothing doing. Nothing can ever happen if Hashem doesn't want it to happen. Therefore, should a man inflict suffering or pain on him, let's say somebody's giving you problems. So now what is the normal reaction of a person? I got to get him back. As he says, no, let him know in his soul that his bad deeds were the cause. And Hashem decreed this upon him and let him not set his thoughts to take revenge from him. The reason we don't take revenge is because if something happens to you, somebody does something bad to you, the common classic example that is given Rashi right there from the Gemara says, what's revenge? You go over to a person and say, can you lend me your shovel? And the guy has a shovel. And he says, no, I'm not going to lend it to you. Why not? I don't want to. A few days later, so what do? You go to Canadian Tire and you buy yourself a shovel. A few days later, your friend loses his shovel. He knocks on your door and says, can I borrow your shovel? You say, you know what? You didn't lend me a shovel last week. I'm not lending it to you today. That is revenge. Why? I'm going to teach him a lesson. Or whatever. Now, you got to realize, the reason why that guy didn't lend you the shovel, of course that wasn't a nice thing. We're not taking away responsibility. The guy didn't lend it to you. But if Hashem wanted you to have that shovel, because you say, listen, I had to go to Canaan Terrace and spend $50 on a shovel. You know, you're such a not nice guy, you made me lose $50. You could just lend me the shovel. I only needed it once. And you didn't lend it to me, and now I had to waste $50 because of you. So now you're going to come to me, I'm going to teach you a lesson what it's like to not get it. So the reason you can't do that is because you got to realize, if Hashem wanted you to have a shovel last week, He would have made sure you would have had a shovel. And for whatever reasons, that person would be the person not to give it to you. So what happened to you was because Hashem wanted it to happen to you, and therefore, let it go. And that's, you know, what if you would have, let's put it this way, what if you would have not asked him for a shovel last week? He wouldn't have said no, right? And now, let's say you had a shovel this week, and the guy would come to you, you would give him the shovel, wouldn't you? But why are you not giving him the shovel? Only because, we're not talking about a guy who would, you'd never give it anyway. But only because you didn't give it to me last week, I'm not giving it to you this week. So that is revenge, because you are harboring that grudge. You gotta realize, really what the Gemara is, what the rabbis are explaining, anyone who takes revenge to a great degree does not believe in God. Because if you believe in God, you know that God didn't want you to have this. Finish. And there's no reason to take revenge. Forgive and go on. Is it not a good thing to lend someone your shovel, yes or no? Can anybody say that if somebody asks you to borrow your shovel, should you give it to him or not? Of course you should. Why shouldn't you do it? So why are you not doing it? Why are you not doing it? Because you didn't give it to me. So what does that have to do with anything? Well, you know, because it was in his power to make my life easier. No, it wasn't in his power to make your life easier. Because God didn't want you to have the shovel last week. Did the guy do something wrong? Yes. So be a big enough man and forgive him. And that's all. And you can't, even to the point where even if you do lend it to him, you can't remind him. You can't say, okay, I'm going to lend it to you even though you didn't lend it to me. Because that's lo sitor, that's bearing a grudge. Either way, you got to look at it that Hashem didn't want you to have it. Not, for sure the other guy did something wrong, but the fact that he did something wrong wasn't the reason you didn't have it. It's because Hashem didn't want you to have it. And therefore, you should not bear a grudge. That's the rationale. So the question then becomes, I don't get it. Hashem tells us not to bear a grudge, but he's allowed to. We can't take revenge, but he's allowed to. Doesn't seem fair. That's the question we want to analyze today. Yeah?
When you talk about shovel, what about the neighbor as a farmer shoots his dog? You go out and shoot his dog, or
you don't take it.
It's something more severe.
You don't hold it against this. Okay, so now we have to analyze. We're gonna have to analyze now. It's interesting. The Mesillas Yesharim in source 7 in chapter 11 says revenge is sweeter than honey, which we have to understand. How is that true? You know, we have to understand that as well. So, that's one issue we have to discuss. Now, if time allows, we'll get into some other issues, such as, we mentioned last week the whole story with the incident with the Baal Peor and the Midianite woman. I can't review the whole story, but basically the women were seducing the Jewish men, and we explained all the reasons why that was happening. The head of the tribe of Shimon goes right in front of Moshe with brazen chutzpah and says, can I take this Midianite woman for myself? And Moshe says, absolutely not. And then he said, what? Well, what allowed you to marry your Midianite woman? And then he went right into the tent in front of everybody and did what he was going to do. Pinchas turns to Moshe and the Medrash adds, after the guy said, what give you the right to marry Midianite? The Medrash says, thereupon Moshe felt powerless and the law slipped from his mind. Okay? And then another Medrash says, then Pinchas went over to Moshe and says, Rebbe, didn't you teach us in the past that if you see a Jewish man fornicating with a non-Jewish woman, the law is kanoim pogim bo. Those that are jealous may kill them. That's the words. Habol aramis. If you see somebody living with a non-Jewish woman. Now, we're not talking about nowadays. Don't do it today. We're talking about when there was God and a temple and everybody knew there was a God. Today, most of the Jews in the world don't even know what God is. They don't understand what Kedusha is. They don't know what they're doing. We're talking about people know what they're doing. Okay, when you had a temple and Jews knew the powerful God that really existed and all that stuff. If somebody has relations with a non-Jewish person, kanoim, those that are jealous, pogimbo, kill him. Okay? So he turned to Moshe. No? So Moshe says, kraina de igarta ihu lehevi fargvanka. He who reads the letter, let him interpret the letter. Meaning to say, if you think you can do it, go right ahead and do it. And what did he do? He went and killed them. So number of questions. Number one, wouldn't you say that Moshe is really jealous for God also? Wouldn't you say Moshe's, right? Why did Moshe kill him on the spot? Big question. Big question over here. And the whole thing is unusual. Why Pinchas more than anybody else? Up to this point in the story, we don't know anything about Pinchas. Pinchas is an obscure non-entity up to this point in the story. Where is Pinchas coming from to be the person to do this? Okay. Another question. The lineage of Pinchas is mentioned. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. So the rabbis say, why do you have to tell me he's the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron HaKohen? So, because the tribes were disdaining Pinchas. Because, you know, Pinchas also not only is being a descendant of Elazar, but that means he's a descendant of Yisro. Because one of Yisro's descendants was the progeny of Pinchas. So he's just like his grandfather. His grandfather was an idol worshiper. So this guy's acting like his grandfather. He went and killed somebody. Therefore, it says, no, we attribute his yichus to Aaron. Aaron was a holy man, so his actions were holy. That's all good and wonderful at the beginning of this parsha. That's where people were denigrating him. The problem is, when you go to last week's parsha, and it tells us when Pinchas saw what was going on, it says again, Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. It mentions again ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Why is he mentioning it again? You should say, this time say Pinchas, and over here, in this part, say Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. So what's going on over the whole story? And more than that, the Gemara tells us, even though the law is Kanoim Pogimbov, you see a person with a non-Jewish woman, those that are jealous shall kill him. But it says, Halacha Vein Moirin came, even though that's the law, but we don't teach people to do the law. You have in the Torah certain things where this is the law, but if you ask, we say, no, be stringent and don't do it. Why? It's all a mystery. All a mystery. So let us begin. And there's a lot of people who talk about this idea of God's vengeance. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz talks about it in one of his Shmuzim. And Rav Shimshon Pinkus of blessed memory speaks about this as well in the Sefer Shabbos Malkasa. On pages Nun Vav, Nun Zayin, Nun Ches, and Nun Tes, he talks about it. And I want to bring what he has to say, which is very, very instructive for us. So when would you say was the first time in the Torah, in a big way, God took revenge for something?
Adam and Eve,
okay.
What was it due to the time of Noah?
Time of Noah, yes.
About the spies.
Spies? Okay, so all good examples. Let's pick one other example, as you'll see in source number 9. When God approaches Avram and gives him the covenant between the parts, the Bris Bein HaBasar, what does Hashem say? He says, know with certainty that your offspring shall be aliens in a land not their own, and they will serve them and they will oppress them 400 years. But also the nation that they will serve, Don Onochi, I shall judge. And afterwards they will leave with great wealth. Hashem tells Avram, your descendants are going to be slaves for 400 years. But then I'm going to get those Egyptians. I'm going to get them. And then the Jews are going to go with great wealth. So the question is, you know, I understand that, you know, Avram is pretty sad hearing his children are going to be slaves for 400 years. I understand it's going to make Avram feel better. They're going to go out with a great wealth. Why does Hashem have to say, I'm going to punish the Egyptians. How's that going to make Avram feel any better? Can you imagine if, God forbid, you're told that your children are going to suffer by somebody for a long time? But afterwards, I'll punish the guy. You think that's going to make you feel any better? So why is Hashem doing that? Also, we know in the Haggadah by the Dayenus in source number 10, it says, had he executed judgment against them, had God punished them and didn't do other things, there'd be enough for us to thank him. In other words, we seem to thank Hashem for the fact that he punished those Egyptians. So why? Why is Hashem, what are you going to punish them for? So Rav Shimshon Pinkus gives the following analogy to explain this. Let us say that a person's child is kidnapped from him. And during that time of being kidnapped, the people who are holding him force him to work as a slave. They take him off to India to make Persian rugs. Okay? As we know, the very horrific conditions that these young children are put under. Let's say it was somebody's child that you knew. Right? And then the father comes along and brings a SWAT team. After 3 years, they find out where he's at. And they were able to release the son. Okay? And the son now is free. So now, let's analyze the situation. For the last 3 years, the kid was a slave. And today he's not. So, how do we look at things today with the past that has occurred? We'd say that today the kid is free, but for 3 years he was a slave. That means there's a blemish that child really has for the rest of his life. There was something negative in his life that for 3 years he was a slave. But what if after the father comes with the SWAT team and saves the son, and then he goes to the kidnappers, and he says, listen, you know what? You kept my son as kidnapped for 3 years, and you made him make Persian rugs for 3 years. Okay, I'm going to now calculate what minimum wage in Canada is. Was it $10.75? No, I don't know what it is. $10 an hour, whatever it is. And you made him work 80-hour weeks. That's $800 a week. 50 weeks a year is $40,000 a year. That's $120,000. You're going to pay. I'm taking $120,000 from you. Okay? And more than that. And for every hour, I'm going to punch your head out. Okay? So he takes the guy and punches him out and makes a shambles of the guy. And he walks out with $120,000. Has something additional been accomplished than how he just taken the SWAT team and removed the son? The answer is, now once you get what we'll call the restitution, once what we will call the revenge has been taken, we now are restoring the dignity of the person. And we're not looking at it as, for 3 years the kid was kidnapped and there's nothing you can do about it and it's like a black mark on his life. But it comes out that person was not allowed to kidnap him. And retroactively, it wasn't a kidnapping at all. It was a long-term summer job program. And the kid worked for him for 3 years and got paid $120,000. And the guy who took him in a way that wasn't nice, we smashed his head in for good measure. So it comes out the blemish that the kid would have walked away with is sort of removed. It's removed. Because now, if somebody would say, listen, I want your kid to go overseas for 3 years, I'll pay him $120,000. Say, okay. If a guy would say, listen, I want your kid to work for me for 3 years. Give him a job overseas. Okay. And he comes back with all the money. Okay, I missed him, but at least he got paid. He got paid what he worked for. So the same thing with Hashem and Avram and the Jewish people. When Hashem said that the Jews are going to be slaves for 400 years, so Avram was very sad about that, because it's not just the Jews were slaves for 400 years. You're putting a blemish on the Jewish people forever. The Jews will always be known as the slave people. And the fact that they will leave, their history will always be marred by the fact that they were slaves for 400 years. So really, that you could never really correct. Right? And therefore, Hashem promises that what I will do is what I can. I will uproot the slavery retroactively. Why? By judging this nation and by them going out with extreme wealth. The Jews left billionaires. Every Jew left Egypt as a billionaire. So therefore, all the money they made was compensation for all the work that they did, and it's as if they were getting paid for working. Now, we all know this to be true. Many, many of us work like slaves to our businesses. Like slaves. Get up at 5 in the morning. If you own the company, the whole responsibility is on your shoulders every minute of the day. You get sick over it, right? And you all do this voluntarily, don't you? Right? You got ulcers, you got this, you got that. You get home at midnight. You hear all these stories, right? Of, you know, people's parents are passing away. Yeah, my father worked in this business, worked in that business. He was up before I was up. I never saw my father all week until Shabbos. But the father did it on his own. It's voluntary. Because at the end of the week, the father's bringing in money. Baruch Hashem, the father was able to buy a nice house. Our father was able to give us the finer things in life. He could pay for us to go to university and this and that. Although I didn't get to see him. Now I want to ask you, did the father work any less hard than a slave in Egypt? Probably the same. But you know what? But the father's getting paid for it.
The father had a choice.
What?
The father had a choice.
I understand. But at the end of the day, you're coming out the same. So if the Jews left Egypt without a penny to their name, so what does their history say of them? They were slaves, and they were people who never, it was a whole wasted period of their lives. If they walk out as billionaires, then they did better if they would have been free people. Normally, if you have a country, of a nation of people, some are rich, most are poor. No? Today, are most Jews rich? I don't think so. Many Jews are poor, or just barely hanging on. Are they, how many billionaires are there? A minority. And when they left Egypt, every Jew was a billionaire. Not a bad deal. Okay, the way they did it wasn't the nicest. At the end of the day, we walked out really good. And that undoes the negativity that past had. And it comes out, it's like they never were slaves. Because at the end of the day, they're giving you a check of $10 billion. You can't really say you're such a slave. Now, they tried to do this in a very minimal way with the German reparations, which was a joke. You know, my mother, of blessed memory, she got reparations from Germans. How much did they give you? It was pennies. No Jew got reparations, became a billionaire. If the Nazis, your machshavah, would have to give every Jew $10 billion, it would have been a different taste. I mean, it doesn't undo what happened, chas v'shalom. But believe me, every survivor would have felt a lot different. Now they just give you a bupkis. $50 a month, face whatever they give me. But it wasn't a lot. Believe me, it wasn't a lot. It wasn't anything that allowed any Jew to have a different lifestyle. Alright, you can buy yourself some more groceries, you know, face. Pay another doctor bill that you have because you were a Holocaust survivor. You know, that's all it was. But it wasn't really restoration. Restoration means you have to give millions. So when they left Egypt, it was mamish restoration. They were restored. It's as if it didn't happen in the past, as much as possible. And that Avram took comfort. Restoration of past honor. And this, Rapinka says, this is the idea of all revenge in the world. This is the nakuda. This is the point of why people enjoy revenge. Why is revenge, as we said, sweeter than honey? And you gotta understand, logically it shouldn't be sweeter than honey. What does it matter that now you didn't give him the shovel? How does that make it sweeter than honey? But the answer is that when you take the revenge, when you turn to the guy and you asked him for a shovel and he said no, you walked away shamefaced. Yeah, the guy thinks I'm a piece of nothing. He couldn't give me the shovel. And it's like a blemish. It does something to you. And now, when now you turn around, and now you're in the position to give it back to him, so it's like the guy never did anything bad to me at all. I've restored my honor retroactively. Yesterday, I was the poor, helpless guy needing a shovel. I needed to come on to him. And he said no. It means he was treating me like a gornished. And my covet, was stepped on, was trampled on. Now I come back and I can do the same thing to him. So it's like yesterday didn't exist. And my honor was restored. If I give it back to him, doesn't restore my honor. but not what he wants, I give it back to him, and he doesn't get it, then it's like, it never was that I didn't have it. It's now he doesn't have it, and I have it, and I didn't give it to him. And that is the sweetness of revenge. The tables have been turned. That's usually why a person wants revenge. Because that person, in the past, you did something to me that has given me a stigma, and I have to do something to remove that stigma from me, and revenge is very sweet. You know, the tables are turned, now I can give it to you the way you gave it to me, and no one's going to know that I was the garnished the way you treated me last time. That's the psychological benefit of revenge, to which the Torah says you're not allowed to do that. Why? And that's, we come back to the words of the Sefer HaChinuch. You have to know that when you wanted to borrow that shovel, it wasn't just your friend who didn't borrow lend you the shovel. It was decreed from heaven that you were not to get the shovel. And therefore, if let's say, for example, or let's say another example. Let's say somebody hit you yesterday. Somebody punched you in the nose. What are you allowed to do? You can go to court. Go to court. But can you go back and punch him in the nose for that? No. That would be revenge. Going to court is not revenge, as we'll see in a minute. That's not revenge. But punching him in the nose is revenge. Well, hold on. I didn't talk about self-defense. Let's say yesterday a guy punched you in the nose and you were bleeding, you went home, and then you thought and said, what a chutzpah, the guy punched the nose. I'm going to go tomorrow and I'm going to go punch him in the nose. That would be revenge. Can't do that. Why? Because if you punch him in the nose, it restores your honor. To which the Torah says, you got to realize, if that guy punched you in the nose yesterday, it's because I wanted you to be punched in the nose. You got to realize that. If it wouldn't have been him, it would have been somebody else. And I wanted your honor to be done. Now, if a guy is coming over to you and wants to punch you in the nose, then the Torah says, you have a mitzvah to defend yourself. If you haven't been punched yet, then clearly you are allowed to defend yourself. But once Hashem has allowed the situation to take place, and you have been punched in the nose, so what's happened has happened, and it's because Hashem wanted you to go through that a degree of suffering, so don't try to undo what God wanted to have happen to you. If you got yourself punched in the nose, it means Hashem said, you had it coming, mister. You forgot what you did 3 years ago when you insulted somebody and degraded somebody and nothing ever came of it. I haven't forgotten. And there's got to be a payback. And now, 3 years later, this guy, it doesn't matter why, but this was the happy candidate, the volunteer, he punched in those. And that was a tikkun for you 3 years ago. Now, what's going to happen if you're going to go back and punch the guy in the nose tomorrow? That means you're trying to undo what God did. If God wanted you to get punched in the nose, let it be. You're going to live with, you live with that punch in the nose. Ugh, I can't ever, whenever I see the guy, I'm embarrassed. Whenever, people are, you know, the whole shul's talking about it. The guy punched me in the nose. What are you going to do about it? I'm not doing anything. Huh? They're calling me a chicken now. They're calling me this guy. It's embarrassing. Hashem says, I want you to live with that. I want you to live with that. That's, you're meant to live that way. If I didn't want you to get punched in the nose, you wouldn't get punched in the nose. That's my ratzon. So you can't fix it up. Don't take revenge. Don't play God over here. Everything came from Shemayim. If you think you need to take revenge, then you don't believe that Hashem orchestrated it, did you? Now you got to think for a minute. There's two people. Why, you think I'm taking revenge? Why? Because that's going to do what? It's going to restore my honor? But Hashem is the one who took away your honor. And there's a good reason why he took away your honor. So don't miss your line in God's calculations. Oh, but the guy did this and that. Okay, you want to go to a Jewish court? You can do that. Now, why is that not nekama? Hopefully later on I'll be able to explain that to you. You can go to a court if you have witnesses and say he punched me in the nose, and they'll evaluate how much the damage was in terms of what? The damage of, you know, a Band-Aid, going to the doctor, if you missed a day of work. They'll also include the shame that you went through. Now, the question is, how is that not revenge? We'll have to discuss that. But that you could do. But to go punch him in the nose, that you cannot do. That you cannot do. Now, so now we understand why we can't take revenge. Clear? Okay, so why is God allowed to? So now he explains like this. That's why it says, Kael Nekamos Hashem. That revenge on Hashem's part isn't just okay or fitting, but it's something that must happen by the laws of the world. Why? Because when you believe in a God, there's a lot of baggage that goes with that. It's not just enough you believe in God. If you believe in God, that means God created the world, right? And if you believe in God, He created the world, that means everything comes from God. And God is, we call this the yichud, the unity of the entire world. Everything revolves around God. Okay, so let's think for a minute. Let's say a person does an aveira. Hashem says, you're not allowed to whatever, you're not allowed to eat treif. And a Jew says, you know what, I don't care what Hashem says, I can eat treif. Okay. And then the next day, he says, you know what, I'm not going to eat any more treif. Right? So what happened? Yesterday you ate treif, today you didn't eat treif. Okay, so what happens? Yesterday you didn't do the will of God, and today you did do the will of God. And now you're moving along in life. Can God ignore the fact that you ate the treif the day before? Can He ignore it? The answer is, He cannot ignore it. He cannot ignore it. Why? It's a very important lesson. It's going to be hard for some of us to take the message, but listen to it. If you do not aver it and think you can get away with it, that means God does not rule the world. Does God rule the world some of the time, or does He rule the world all of the time? If God, that's a very important question, because there's some people who believe He only rules the world part of the time. There are many people who believe God did not rule the world between 1939 and 1945. That's a big mistake. God, by definition, rules the world every nanosecond of the world. Why? He created the world. The world has no independent existence. Every existence they have comes from Hashem. Whatever happens, even though man has free will choice, it's within a realm of how much choice Hashem lets them act upon.
But God's forgiving.
Hold on. You raise a good point. I'm going to get there. God is forgiven only when? Only when? When is God forgiving? Oh, when you do tshuva. Let's say the guy didn't do tshuva. The guy said, yes, I didn't eat treif. Let's say the guy normally doesn't eat treif, right? He's a kosher Jew. And he had a big yetzer to eat treif. He went to Rhode Island for vacation, and there were clams all over the place, and there was no kosher restaurants, and let me try what a clam tastes like. And he mamish had seafood, and he ate it, and says, you know, it's not that great. And he goes back to keeping kosher. Okay, all right, and now Hashem says, he thinks he got away with it. It's not possible for anyone to get away with anything for one day. Not because God cares about His honor, but if you do an aveira and nothing happens about it, that means what has been proven is that God is not the master of the universe. God is the master of the universe. And therefore, if anybody does anything against the will of Hashem, God must, because if you do an aveira and nothing happens, that means God's honor has been diminished. And there's one honor in the world that cannot be diminished, and that's God's honor. Why? Because He's God. If God's honor is diminished in this world, then the appreciation of God is diminished in this world, and then everybody does what they darn well please. And therefore, as much as God per se, if it was just for God Himself as a private individual, it wouldn't bother Him. But since God is God, and all semblance of structure and governance and religion all depends on God being the all-powerful God, it can never be that the all-powerful God is not recognized as all-powerful. And therefore, if you can figure, you know, part of my life, God doesn't run the show. You know what it is? The times I do have errors. And God will ignore it. And that's what Gemara says. Anyone who thinks that God overlooks his actions, as it were, God will overlook his life. God is not able to let it go forever. Forever he cannot let it go. Why? Because when you do an aver, you are affronting the Almighty. You are, we don't realize, when you do an aver, you're saying, God, you're not the king. You don't run the show. And this world cannot exist with people understanding that. There'll be no religion. There'll be no Judaism. And therefore, God, out of a sense of respect for the office of being God, has to say that I can't let this go, and therefore you must be punished. And Rapinka says, this is the idea what we call the depths of judgment. When God judges us, He goes to the very depths. Because everything you've done is based on God giving you the ability to do things. Everything you do is in vis-a-vis, how do you respect God as Him being the master of the universe? And therefore, Hashem has to inspect every single action of you do. And then Rapinkus ends off, and this is what I have on source 11. I'll say it in Hebrew, you have it in English. He says, Nimsa sheba emesa yisurim va'onshim. When people suffer and get punished, Hema tova nifla, this is a wondrous good. La'olam, for the world in general, ula'adam, and for the individual. Why? She'motzim la'or es yichad Hashem. Because that suffering brings out the unity of God, which is the ultimate good, which blocks up any darkness that can be between man and God. In other words, when a person walks away from a Holocaust and says, where was God in the Holocaust? What happens to God's prestige in that person's eyes? That field, God has no power. What happened when God wanted to destroy the Jews after the sin of the golden calf, after the sin of the spies? Moshe says, Hashem, don't do that. You know why? Because all the world will say you didn't have power to bring them into Israel. The world must realize that God is all-powerful. And for Him to be all-powerful, there's no way that bad can go in this world and not be dealt with. If there's evil in this world, under any circumstance, and Hashem does not deal with it, that diminishes God's honor in this world. And therefore, God comes with a vengeance. What does vengeance mean? Vengeance means restoring the honor of God. Kel nekamas Hashem, kel nekamas Hofia. And therefore, when Hashem, therefore this is the one unique case where Hashem can say, don't do as I do, but do as I say. Because the whole reason why you can't take nekama, because that means you don't agree with how God is running the world. But when God takes nekama, it's because He is agreeing how He runs the world. If, God forbid, somebody like an Adolf Hitler thinks he can kill 6 million Jews and cause such a desecration of God's name, God says that cannot be. It cannot be. Everything he did has to be turned around. Totally. Now, it hasn't been totally, but why do you think, 3 years after Hitler's dead, the state of Israel comes into being? That was God's revenge. That was God's revenge. Hitler never dreamed any time in his life there'd ever be a state of Israel again. And he was downright sure he almost finished off the Jewish people entirely. Even when he put a bullet in his head, he never dreamed that there'd be a state of Israel 3 years later. He did such a blow, a lethal blow to the Jewish people. Under normal circumstances, there'd be nothing left of the Jewish people. And Hashem said, I'm going to take revenge for my honor. No such thing as a wicked man who kills 6 million Jews and he's going to get away with it. So number one, putting a bullet in your head is the lowest of the low way to die. I mean, that is the lowest of the low. At least get a firing squad. Right? Let the troops take, it shows he was mamash a gornish of a gornish. Right? And it all came out. That's the lowest of the low. And more than that, I'm going to make a Jewish nation. And that's the revenge. Why? The revenge is restoring God's honor. So really, revenge means to restore one's honor. So there's times when revenge is allowed. There's times when revenge isn't allowed. There's only one honor that needs to be restored, and that's God's. Your honor does not need to be restored. Why? Because if God wanted your honor to not be diminished, He wouldn't have had it to begin with. And if you feel you need to restore your honor, then you're going against God's will. You're going against God's will. The whole reason God let the guys punch in the nose is you're supposed to get punished. So now you're undoing God's honor. You follow? This guy, if you one day just walk on, somebody punches right in the nose, right? There's a reason why he punched you in the nose. Whatever aver you did, Hashem went and cleaned the slate with that. Okay, now you're clear to go. Got to remember, really what happened is God was taking revenge on you. for whatever avera you did in the past. And if you want to undo God's revenge, that's a desecration of God. But for God to take revenge on you, that's the whole point, is to bring out the unity of God, to realize there is a God in this world, and therefore you have to suffer and you have to be punished. So therefore, what's good for God is not good for us. Now you're going to ask a question. So a guy punched me in the nose, so I can't punch him back. So why can I go to a court? Why am I allowed to go to a court and get money and I'll get monetary restitution for the embarrassment that happened to me? The answer is because now you're going to court as one of God's children, and it's in the court. It's not you. It's not you taking the revenge. It's the court, which we know every Jewish court is an aegis of God. A court is called Elohim. A court is acting with God's will. Then God, of course, could say, you punched my little, you punched this child of mine. Number one, you punched him because he was supposed to get it. That's why I wanted him punched. In other words, when A punches B, we have to dissect it in two ways. B was supposed to get the punch because he did something against Hashem. A, Hashem had to find somebody to do it. So he looked for somebody who had their own grudge. And A punched B because A wanted to punch B. So there's two factors going on at the same time. There's A happening to do the will of God, A, and B, A is being a rusher to B. So the part where A was fulfilling the will of God, so B can't undo that A was doing the will of God. So how would that happen? If B would punch A 2 days later in the nose and say, the fact you dissed me like that, I don't want that to be. But Hashem said, no, I want you to have that little suffering. That's to make up for what you did to me. Fine. But now, God says, but B is one of my children. And A violated my Torah. My Torah says don't punch somebody. So for you violating my Torah, now I'm going to punish you, and now you got to pay back B. It all comes back to, because now A, by punching B, he did his own avera. So now we take him to a court to fix him up, and he gets revenged by God through the court, and then the money goes to B. Did I confuse you here? Do you understand what's going on? There's a big difference. You go to a court than taking the law in your own hands. That's where there's no vigilantism generally in Judaism, because then when you're doing it for yourself, you're not doing it for God. When you do it through a court, then it's for God. And that's how that happens. Okay, now, did you have a question?
Hmm.
Yeah?
I understand everything, and that's right. Everything's right. My question that concerns me a bit, what I don't really understand, is, say you take a person who's never done an avera, ever. A good past Jew,
right.
There's an accident, and his wife and his kids are killed, and he suddenly is so emotionally destroyed that he actually doesn't take revenge, but he's so down that he will go and eat trafe and say, I can't believe there's a God. And then a day or two later thinks about it and does tshuva and everything is back to normal. What happens there when it comes to revenge?
Okay, good. So you're leading me to my next point. Thank you for that question. Perfect. And that leads into the very next point. So from this picture, and as your question just suggested, it seems when we do something bad, it's hopeless. I went and ate the clams. It's hopeless. God's got to take revenge on me. The answer is not necessarily. And with this, we'll have a great Hasidic master explains with a beautiful parable. If you look at the pasuk, it says, Kel Nekomas Hashem. God is a God of vengeance. Kel Nekomos Hofia. The God of revenge, Hofia, appears. What's this appears business? Why do you need two clauses? Just say, Kael Nekomos Hashem. Doesn't it get the point across? God is the vengeful God. What do you need another clause? Kael Nekomos Hofia. Which seems to repeat. And the vengeful God, appears. So one of Hasidic masters brings a beautiful parable. He says, once there was a king who's being led on a parade, and he's displaying his power and glory and the honor he gets. And everyone's cheering and this and that, and it's wonderful. Then there's one little kid, a 12-year-old kid, a ragged little urchin, who in his ignorance of how important the king is, he takes a rock and throws it at the king and hits him right in the face. That was one of these, little kids, be a cute idea, right? Well, the guards see what's going on, quickly to go get the kid. Your master, your highness, kill him. What a chutzpah, this and that. So the king says, if I execute him now, what will he have learned? And what will I have gained? Therefore, the king said, I want you to take this young boy and bring him to the palace and raise him as a prince. Show him every respect. Teach him the ways of kingship, of royalty. So, they bring him to the palace. They educate him 4, 5, 6 years. And then one day, this young fellow, who now is a young adult, he comes to the king and falls on his face. And he's groveling at the king's feet and says, Your Majesty, I've reflected back on what I did 6 years ago. And now that I understand what royalty is and majesty is, Your Majesty, I deserve to die 1,000 deaths for the terrible insult that I gave you 6 years ago. And the king turns to him and says, Enough. The mental anguish that you now experience is sufficient vengeance for your crime. What does that mean? The king could have just killed the boy 6 years ago. That would have been revenge. That would have restored his honor. But what would he have gained? What would he have gained? And what would the boy have gained? But the truth of the matter is, 6 years later, that young man feels 10 times worse for what he did, is 10 times more repentant, and now is a loyal servant of the king, and his crying and his being sorry is plenty vengeance for the king. Why does he have to die? Similarly, the rabbis say, if a person doesn't have error against Hashem, what does Hashem gain if he kills the offender on the spot? The person ate the clams, right? The story you said, Hashem, something terrible happened and he lost his avera. So Hashem could kill the guy on the spot. That would definitely take care of nekama and God's honor would be understood and all that. But what would be gained? The offender, whenever you do an avera, that means you're ignorant to God's authority to a certain extent, right? So the only way, the best way to gain is when it's kael nekamas hofia, when Hashem appears. The most potent vengeance is when the sinner is punished. How? By realizing what he's done. When Hashem reveals his sovereignty. And the most potent vengeance is when the sin realizes he did the most unthinkable crime possible. Usually when you sin, you don't think it's so bad. So what's the greatest vengeance? Is for the guy to realize how bad it is what he did. Because then you're forever embarrassed. But and God's honor is restored, but you don't have to die. And that's why the rabbis say that yes, suffering and punishments is an excellent way of bringing out the unity of God. And that's an excellent way of the just revenge in this world. But you know what? Hashem would much rather prefer it happen in a different way. And that's why Hashem always gives you time to decide how the revenge will come. And almost all the time, with rare exception, Hashem waits. And he's waiting for you to come to exact the revenge on his behalf. And say, Hashem, I am so sorry. You know, and therefore, you're able to uproot. What's the real problem? The main problem is that, you know, 3 weeks ago, you went and did an aver. You showed there was no king. Well, we can't let that be. That cannot be, right? Cannot be that you aver. You know, at a certain time in my life, God's not the king. So when you come to Hashem and say, Hashem, I remember what I did 2 years ago. I remember 2 years ago, on this day, I ate clams in Rhode Island. Because I thought no one's going to look. And now I've come to understand how terrible what I've done was. And I'm sick over this. I'm mamish. It's not just you say you're sorry. It's like you mamish, you're turning yourself over from this. Saying it cannot be. Hashem says, you know what? You've now shown that past, you didn't get away with anything. The internal psychological pain that you went through was plenty vengeance enough. To realize, and God's honor, Hashem said, my honor's been restored retroactively to 2 years ago. You didn't get away with anything. And that's how you meant to live. So that's the beautiful idea. That's how tshuva is allowing vengeance to happen without the pain. And that's what Hashem always, lo yichbot Hashem b'mos hames. Hashem doesn't want the Russia to die. Hashem wants the Russia just to be venged upon through his own actions. And that's kel nekamas hofia. There's two ways. Kel nekamas Hashem. Hashem will let you have it and finish and that's it. Rakel Nekama Sophia. Hashem appears. If Hashem, you let Hashem appear and you do tshuva from his appearance, that's good. The main thing is we got to know there's a God. We say this, you can imagine, this guy was a secular Jew all his life, successful secular Jew all his life, all of a sudden he becomes a Baal Tshuva. So what are you doing? You're so successful, you didn't keep Shabbos, you didn't keep kosher, this and that. He says, I understand. You know what kind of rebellion it was against the king? You know what kind of disgusting thing I did? I'm saying, all that, my whole life, my whole past, garnished. I didn't get anything from that. You never gain by going against the king. It's all worthless. Now, I recognize it. And that recognition, that's enough. That's all Hashem needs. Because now it shows that your whole life, you lived by the fact there was a God over your life. Retroactively, you fixed it up. Do you understand? And that's really what a person should do. When a person hurts another person, he has to ask forgiveness in a way that he really means it. Can't just say, okay, I'm sorry. If you think I did something wrong, I'm sorry. No, you have to say, I'm really sorry for what I did. And that you enable the restoration process to happen. That you have to do no matter what. Even after you punch the guy in the nose and the court says that you're guilty, you have to pay that, the guy still has to say he's sorry. And he has to mean it and to restore it. So now we can begin to understand, I think it's very clear why human beings are not allowed to exact revenge on other human beings. Because it's not your place to play God. But God, it's very appropriate for God to exact revenge on human beings because God's job is to play God. So now we come back to Pinchas. So what happened over here? The Jewish people are just about ready to go into the land of Israel, and they had been preparing for this for 40 years. Right? 40 years. So now, The kingdom of Moab and Midian, what do? They make this conspiracy to seduce the Jewish men. And look what happens. Look what's going on over here. This is the greatest desecration of God's name. And a lot of people are falling into this to the point they turn to the head of the prince of Shimon. Says, what's going to happen? They want to kill a lot of the people in our tribe. What are you going to do about this? He says, you know what? I'm going to legalize it. I, the prince, will go right in front of Moshe and show him it's allowed. Whew. This is already showing there ain't no God in the world, isn't it? Right? You know, people do averus is one thing. Everybody does an aver in the life, that's one thing. Hashem will have to deal with it. Hashem will have to deal with it. You're a prince. And you say, you know, I see my people are doing averus. You know, we have to do something about this. It looks like, you understand, it's much unbelievable. Remember, most of you were here last week, so you remember what we talked about last week. It was the age of Aquarius. Remember, the whole world was having a different feeling about sensuality and all these different things. God was putting all these energies in. And 200,000 men are succumbing to this. It's bad enough you sinned. But don't turn around and try to legalize it. And that's what's going on with the prince. The prince was going, not because he was a big Baal Taiva necessarily. He says, listen, many of the people who sinned were from the tribe of Shimon. So it's a calamity. The constituents are saying, what's going to happen? Moshe's going to kill so many of us because we were with the Moabite woman. You do something about it. He says, I'll do something about it. I'm going to take a princess, go right in front of Moshe and say it's allowed. This is going to be legal because a prince did it. Whoa, now you took it to a new level now. Jews get tempted to do averus. That's part of the game. Hashem tested them. Let's see if they can pass. They won't pass. We'll deal with it. Now you're going to come and legalize it? Whoa, that already is totally diminishing God's honor in this world. Somebody's got to take. Now, what would have happened if he would have done it? Nobody would have done anything. What if the prince would have did what he did with the Midianite woman, and he goes, oh my God, look what's happening. And nobody did anything. What kind of disgrace? Is there a God in this world? No, this is after 40 years in the desert. 40 years. We're not talking about secular Jews who've been in America for 100 years. They didn't have even grandparents who were religious. Talk about they were eating man, drinking water from God for 40 years. Okay, you did an aver, but now you want to legalize an aver in the Torah? What kind of chutzpah is that? That demanded nekama. that demanded revenge. And that's what Pinchas did. He had to avenge God's honor. There was nobody there to avenge God's honor. And therefore, he was the one who had to mamish avenge God's honor. Pinchas wasn't doing it for himself. He was avenging God's honor. So you have to realize that what was going on, you know, that's what happens in society. After there's a certain accepted morality, and then people fall away from the morality, what do? They legislate the new lower level of morality as being legal. So now it's okay to do it. And that's what this prince was doing, right in front of Moshe's face. Why Moshe? Moshe's the law body. Right in front of the law. He's going to change the law. He's going to make a new vote in the House of Commons. We're going to change the law right here and now. And God says, no such thing. I'm the God. I decide what's moral and not moral, even under these circumstances. No matter how tempting these women are, and they really are tempting, I made them tempting. I didn't make it. Well, you know, Rabbi, you know, what can you do? People are born that way. Well, believe me, all those people felt that way, that they were born that way. Hashem put the Viagra water in there. Hashem put an aura of the age of Aquarius. They all felt like that. Mamish felt, I can't control myself. You know what? Hashem said you can't do it. Finish. Don't go changing the laws on me. You go change one of God's laws, that is the supreme insult to God. Say, you know, God, your laws apply at certain times but not other times. What? It means I'm not the God all the time. That demands vengeance. What does it mean, vengeance? Restoring God's honor. God's honor has to be restored. And that's why Pinchas had to do exactly what to do. There was nothing else that could have been done. Okay, that's clear? So now I got 8 minutes to explain one more thing. Okay, any other questions? Any questions? It's all clear now? Now the question is, why didn't Moshe? Why didn't Moshe kill him? Why Pinchas? And who Pinchas? Why Pinchas? And here's a very deep idea that really needs another hour. We're going to try to do it in 8 minutes. But this is a very important... So this first idea I think is very important. Number one, to understand where God is, why God is allowed to be vengeful and why we're not. And really, God doesn't really want to hurt anybody. He would prefer that you just kill Nekamas Mofia, just do tshuva, and that's fine. It's enough vengeance for Hashem. He doesn't need any more. All we need is we should recognize that Hashem is the boss. That's all. And God gives us lots of warnings, usually lots of warnings before he punishes. So then why didn't Hashem give him lots of time for this aver? Here there was no time. A third of the Jews were sinning and they were legalizing it already. This one said, well, you know, I'll give you lots of years to do tshuva. He can't. If you want to change the law on top of everything, then we got to act immediately. There's nothing to do. There has to be an immediate response. But why not Moshe and why yes, Pinchas? The answer is this law of being... if you see someone with a Midianite woman, a non-Jewish woman, you can kill them. It says those that are jealous for Hashem can kill them. So the question is, we said if somebody bothers you, you can't take revenge, right? Let's do the equations here. A person against a person cannot take revenge, right? Hashem against a person can't take revenge. Okay, how about this? Hashem on a person on behalf of Hashem taking revenge to somebody else. Could that be done? The answer is, it depends. Why are you taking the revenge? If, when you're taking the revenge, it's totally and only for the sake of God, then you're allowed. But what if, you know, the guy you're taking revenge is somebody you didn't personally like either? What if, let's say, yesterday you asked the guy to borrow a shovel, and he didn't give you the shovel. Today, he's sleeping with a Midianite woman, and now you want to kill him to take revenge for God. Can we be so sure you're taking revenge for God? Maybe it's because he didn't lend you the shovel yesterday. Got to be awfully careful. When someone wants to take revenge on God's behalf, you got to be so careful what you're doing. Because what did we say? If you're taking personal revenge, that's the terrible avera. If I take personal revenge against you, it means I don't believe in God, right? When God takes revenge against a person, that is reinforcing the belief in God. When I'm taking revenge on a person on behalf of God, if it is not 100% on behalf of God, then what am I ultimately doing? I'm denying God's existence. If I'm doing it for my own needs, then I'm denying God's existence. So that's what we say. The law is, those that are jealous for God can do it, but we don't encourage it. Because it's very rare someone's going to have that unique ability to only do it for God's sake. So now, Moshe Rabbeinu to be a more honest person than Moshe, more loyal person than Moshe. But what happened? The guy turns to Moshe and he says, can I marry this woman? He says, no. He says, and what about you? Can you imagine what kind of, the chutzpah, right to Moshe's face, to say, and what about you? You married a Midianite woman. And we know what the answers were. Number one, she converted. Number two, it was before the Torah was given. Before such command was given. There were answers. It's not a question of an answer. The chutzpah. The chutzpah was so great. Moshe, at that point, said, I don't know if I can punish him that it's going to be totally and only to take revenge on God's behalf. Because Moshe wasn't sure. Because I'm human, and that really hurt. Now, how much will I punish him only for God? Or maybe a little, maybe it's 98% for God's sake and 2% to make me feel a little better. Even that 2% I'm not allowed to do. Maybe it was Hashem's will that I was supposed to get this insult to my face as a kapara. So Moshe's kind of betwixt and between it. It's something he can do. Well, Aaron is not alive anymore. Not alive anymore. And really what's going on, this is not just an attack against Moshe. Isn't this an attack against the whole establishment? What was the whole message of the Age of Aquarius? Age of Aquarius was to go against the establishment. They don't go to the universities, burn down the American flag. It was all of that. It's not just, you know, do your own thing, man. No rules. There are no rules. Remember, it's going against establishment. So now, who would be the only person, what would be the profile of a person who could go against these people and would succeed? And we could say he was doing this for the sake, without any ulterior motives. But it would have to be somebody who's not part of the establishment. Correct? Now here you're going to see how incredible Pinchas is. And you only can appreciate this if you contrast him with Korach. We learned about Korach a few weeks ago. Korach, and I don't go through the whole parsha again with Korach, but Korach was, in fact, probably the biggest tzaddik of the generation. If not the biggest, the second biggest. And we learned last Thursday, we mentioned, that Korach had big spiritual plans. Hashem had big spiritual plans for Korach that even Korach did not know. Just like there is a concept called a Kohen Gadol, the high priest, he had planned that Korach one day would be called the Levi HaGadol. An office we don't have because there never was anybody worthy for that. Korach would have been worthy to be a Levi HaGadol, which would have Moshe, Aaron, and Korach, would have been the three leaders of the Jewish people. Now, Korach did not know this. Did not know this. What did Hashem do? Now, there's a very important spiritual rule that you got to know. That whenever Hashem is planning greatness for you that you're not aware of, He'll give you major tests before He gives you that greatness. If you go through history, any great Jewish leader who remained a great Jewish leader, Hashem tested them severely till they became that great leader. I don't have time to get into all that, but that's the rule. Now, what was the test He gave Korach? Very simple. After Moshe and Aaron got the two big positions, it was now time to appoint a tribal leader of the tribe of Levi, and by all logic, Korach should have been the next guy, should clearly have been the next guy. It was for sure should have been him. What happens in? It was given to someone much lower of spiritual stature. And Korach could not understand this. He just couldn't get it. And he prophetically knew, accurately, that he had a descendant would be Shmuel HaNavi, equal to Moshe and Aaron together. Shmuel HaNavi, equal to Moshe and Aaron together. So he says, it cannot be! It cannot be that I'm not up there! And the answer is, he's right! But you have two ways of looking at it, Korach. You have one way of looking at it and say, must be that Moshe's wrong. But how could that be? Hashem says he's my trusted prophet. I don't care. The facts are the facts. The facts are, and it's right, he was not wrong. He was as great as Moshe and Aaron. He was. That's not hallucination. That was true. He's as great as him and I'm not getting a job. Doesn't make sense. Hashem said he's Moshe's man. Well, something doesn't make sense. It's not proper. I don't have time to get off of this. So question you ask, so what should Korach have done? You know what he should have done? Fast forward to Parshas, you know what you're supposed to have done. Now let's look at Korach and look at the contrast of great people. Do you think Pinchas was a slouch? Pinchas was a great, great, great Jew. Pinchas became Eliyahu HaNavi. It's the same person. He was a Kohen Gadol for many years and Eliyahu HaNavi. How that happened, we don't get into it right now. He was a great, great Jew. Let's look at what Pinchas has had to do through life. Pinchas was the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron. Yeah? Okay. Now, when Hashem made the Kohanim, what did he do? He went to the tribe of Levi, and Hashem said, okay, Aaron, you are going to be a Kohen. You have four sons, Elazar, Isamar, Nadav, and Avihu. Those are Kohanim. These are the first five Kohanim. Here's the rule, guys. From this point on, if you have any more children, your children are Kohanim. Okay? And from now on will come all the Kohanim. But, what did we not address? What about, let's say, Elazar already had a child, already, who is not designated as a Kohen. Hashem said, Aaron, you're a Kohen. Elazar, you're a Kohen. Isamar, you're a Kohen. Nadav, you're a Kohen. None of you didn't have any kids. That's out. Right? Now, Elazar had a child. His name was Pinchas. Pinchas alive. Did Hashem say Pinchas is a Kohen? No. Who would be the next Kohanim? Future children that would be born. So what's going to happen to Pinchas? He got caught in the middle. The people who were alive, everyone who was alive was appointed a Kohen, and not Pinchas, who's a descendant of Aaron, who one day will be Eliyahu HaNavi. You don't think he's a great person? Skipped. Who's going to be other Kohanim? Future children that are born. I want to ask you, if you were Pinchas, what might be going through your mind? This isn't the same problem that Korach had. This was infinitely harder. Why? Because Korach, at the end of the day, even though he wasn't the tribe, the head of the tribe of Levi, he still was a Levi. He was a Levi. He got to carry the ark. He still had a place in life. So be a Levi. Levi gets 10% of everybody's stuff. He gets to carry the ark. He has a job. Okay, it's not the job you wanted. You got a job. Right? What did Pinchas have to look forward to? A Kohen he ain't. Right? A Kohen he ain't. A Levi? Doesn't appear he's a Levi either. Because the Levim were the jobs from Kohos, had Gershon, Kohos, and Merari. Gershon, Kohos, and Merari. From their children were Levim. Pinchas wasn't from Gershon, you know, it didn't fit. He was already excluded by being a son of Aaron. So Pinchas was what we classical nishtahin, nishtaher. A Kohen he ain't, a Levi he ain't. Someone asked a question, how is he going to make a parnasa? And why is this? That's what God said. Now, Korach wasn't a prince, but was a Levi. Had a job, knew what to do, this and that. He couldn't take it. Pinchas has nothing. So what does he do? What does he do? Nothing. He says, if this is the will of God, who am I to argue? Now, how long did Korach stew on what he felt was something was wrong against him? Not more than a couple months. The Levim were appointed in the second year, and somewhere in the second year it was probably not more than, I don't know, 6 months. He couldn't take it for more than 6 months. He just couldn't live with it. Couldn't live with it. Pinchas, in the second year, when the Jews are in the desert, I'll be done in 2 minutes, was ignored, and now this story was at the end of the 40 years. He sat for 38 years, not knowing what his future was going to be. You don't think maybe he would have been enticed to want to rebel with Korach? He didn't have what to rebel? He says, I ain't getting involved in that rebellion. You don't think they went and said, hey, Pinchas, you've been overlooked too. You know, you should be, you're a big man too. I'm not getting involved. Hashem doesn't want me to be leader. He doesn't want me to be, I don't know why. 38 years, Pinchas says, I don't know why God did this, but there must be a good reason for it. And what generally the Yetzer wants to do, to tear you down before the moment of opportunity of greatness comes. Korach could have been a Levi HaGadol. Never ever happened. He didn't have the patience to trust in God. Pinchas waits 38 years. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, unexpected, all these Jews are bowing down to a god and acting immorally. And now the prince wants to legislate that all morality doesn't exist. And everything we said in last week's parsha. And Moshe can't turn against him because Moshe knows he could be biased and doesn't know how much he's doing, only forgot or not. Who possibly, if the whole Jewish people could say, you know what, I have no axe to grind for God. One thing I didn't get from God was nachas. So if Pinchas would go, you would know he's 100% avenging God's honor. There's nothing. He's not establishment at all. God had been preparing Pinchas his whole life. And to have him suffer for 38 years, not knowing why God did this to him. Why in the world are you, I'm a nice, good Jew, I just want to tell me what I should, what's my purpose in life? You didn't make me Yisrael, I'm not going to be a farmer. You didn't make me a Levi, you didn't make me a Kohen. What am I, for goodness sake? All I want to know is how to be a good Jew. Is that asking too much? And he's pitiless. He's a great man. I have so much potential, so much to give. You're not giving me a chance to give. Why are you doing this to me, Hashem? And you see how hard it was, because Korach, who was greater than Pinchas, couldn't even haltois 6 months. And Pinchas waits 38 years. You know why? For this one moment in time, where there'll be nobody else in the entire planet who can do what has to be done now. And it took 38 years for you to be ready for this moment. You know what you're going to get now? Bris Kahunas Olam, an everlasting, eternal priesthood. And you will be Eliyahu HaNavi. And you will bring the Mashiach. And that's where Mashiach comes from. Mashiach comes from people who start asking, could ask questions. You know, it's been 60 years since God killed 6 million. And I still don't understand why. And God says, you don't have to. But boy, I need people ready. When the time's going to come, I need people ready. And you have no idea of what God is planning. Pinchas could, in his wildest dreams, not have imagined during the 38 years that he was being primed for this opportunity that's coming up. And had he fallen at once, this Yetzer Hara, in those 38 years, and abandoned what his spiritual growth? For 38 years, he put on Talis and Tefillin. For 38 years, he learned Torah by Moshe Rabbeinu. 38 years, he took it all, and he wasn't insulted at all. He didn't feel he had to take revenge. He says, this is the will of Hashem, this is the will of Hashem. And, you know, if I never know the answer, I never know the answer. But more often than not, Hashem will always show you. But you see, the thing is, Korach went down to the grave not knowing that he had that ability to be the Levi HaGadol. Pinchas waited enough. If you wait long enough, the answers come. Hopefully in this world, but for sure in the next world. Imagine what would have happened to Jewish history had there not been a Pinchas. Torah says it clear. God would have wiped out all the Jews. So that's the person who's going to be the one to venge for God, and you know that it's only for God and not for his own self-interest. It's Pinchas. And therefore God, you say, God, why are you so cruel to Pinchas? Why are you so mean to him? Hashem says, I know what I'm doing. Will you just wait? I know, and we're going to need someone in 38 years. It's going to take 38 years to prepare such a person. You think such a person gets prepared in 6 weeks? 38 years it's going to take. And then maybe. And even when he does it, things people won't believe he was sincere. And I'll have to prove that he's sincere. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. He goes all the way back to Aaron. Aaron was such a believer in Hashem. And so was Pinchas. There's so much more to talk about, but that I think is a very critical point. So I think when... Two things we really learned today. Number one, why we shouldn't take revenge and why Hashem should take revenge. And number two, when we think God is doing bad things to us, you got to know that He's got great things planned for us. You just got to trust Him and let it happen. Don't force the hand. If you force the hand, it is never going to come out good.
How do you know for bad things are happening? What's the reason for it?
We don't have to know. We don't have to know. God will take the revenge as necessary, and God will place people in the position to act on His behalf. You gotta have the patience. That's the bottom line. Okay. Shker.
Thank you.